We'll get started here in just a few minutes. I'm waiting for a few additional board members to arrive.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Dr. Mittman.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Well, it is 10 o'clock.
We don't have quorum yet, Dr. Oh. Dr. Mittman.
Oh, all right. Well, I saw in your report, Mr. LaMountain, that Galvanize closed.
They did. They shut down their their operations here in Arizona, and they're continuing to do everything online through their Colorado facility.
Okay. And who are we waiting for? I see Susan. Hi, Susan. I see Doug.
I know that Dr. Leck is, I just sent her another log in to get in. I don't see Mr. Wallace, and I don't see Mr. Romano, and I know they both confirmed that they were going to be here.
Okay. I can text Scott.
Michael Romano, Mr. Romano is in. Dr. Leck is in.
This is Michael Romano. I've been able to join. Sorry, I was having technical difficulties.
Good morning, Mike. Dr. Mittman, we do have quorum now if you want to.
Okay. And I texted Mr. Wallace.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's see here. October 27th, 2002, meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education is called to order at 10:03 a.m. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the general public and to members of the AZ Board for Private Postsecondary Education that the board will hold a meeting open to the public on the date and the time indicated above. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found online at ppse.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during specific time blocks. The board chair, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. That'd be fun. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice. ARS 38-431.03A3. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may also hold an executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 on any agenda item listed for the purpose of discussion or consideration of records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. Americans with Disabilities Act. Persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as a sign language interpreter or a copy of this document by contacting Kevin LaMountain at 602-542-5716. Can we get a roll call, please?
Dr. Mittman.
Present.
Dr. Mittman is present. Dr. Leck?
Present.
Dr. Leck is present. Mr. Romano?
Present.
Mr. Romano is present. Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace? Not in attendance. Ms. Cardullo?
Present.
Ms. Cardullo is present. I'm Kevin LaMountain, Executive Director for the Arizona State Board. Rest of staff would be Ms. Terry Stanfill.
Present.
Present. Mr. Keith Blanchard
here.
Keith Blanchard is present. Jacqueline Rome.
Present.
Jacqueline Rome is president, present. And Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan.
I am here.
Thank you. All accounted for.
Okay. Are there any conflicts? Sorry, go ahead.
I think Mr. Wallace just joined.
Okay. Mr. Wallace?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry. Okay.
Thank you. And Mr. Wallace is present as well.
Perfect. Are there any conflicts of interest? I'll take that as a no. And let's see, can we get a motion? I'll make a motion to accept the audio recordings as the official open minutes of the board meeting from August 25th, 2022. Can I get a second, please?
Mike Romano, second.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of aye, six ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
I'm working from home, I thought it'd be kind of good if I could time a vote with the dog barking. What? Okay, next up is the executive director's report. Mr. LaMountain.
Great, thank you. Members of the board, in your board folder, I put the information in there for, regarding the board report. You'll see some updated financial information, both for our operational account, which is the 2056 account, and the student tuition recovery fund, which is the 2037 account. In terms of the operation account, we are running about where I thought we would be. We are, our revenues are starting to reflect the new fee structure that was put in place by SB 1065 last year. Our expenses, you'll notice that it shows our expenses are about $16,000 over what our revenues were to drive that. The reason for that is primarily due to our rent cost hit during this time frame. The cost of the Attorney General's office and our CSB also, all those bills came due in the same month. So that's the reason why you'll see the deficit that we have. We will make that up as we move into November timeframe, which is what we're currently working with, the November renewal schedule. On the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, I think one of the things to note here is that for the first time in a number of years, our Student Tuition Recovery Fund is over $500,000. We still have the number currently right now is $500,483. We've got about another $75,000 to $85,000 that will be added to the fund throughout the invoice that happened. Most of those, the invoices are due and the payments are due tomorrow on October 28th. And I'm tracking down some of the last minute schools that need to pay into that fund. It will bump us over the 500,000, obviously through expenses through the rest of this year, through June 30, we will go below that 500,000 as we draw down some of that money. You'll see we do have two student tuition recovery fund claims that we'll be voting on today. So it is highly likely that we will have to bill one more time for the student tuition recovery fund in 2023. And assuming that we don't have any catastrophic school closures, that will push us over that 500 minimum, and we should be good to go for 24 and potentially into 2025. That's our goal. We've had a few school closures. As you see the list on there, We've had a couple campus that have ceased operations, the Carrington campus, East Phoenix campus. They're actually two schools, two of those locations are in the same actual facility, so they just closed off one of their licenses. Dr. Mittman, you asked about Galvanize. Galvanize has ceased operations in Arizona for physical facility. However, they're doing online through their facility in Colorado, and that will they'll continue to house all of the student transcripts, and any of the files will go through the Galvanize in Colorado. And then you see Upper Iowa and New Horizons Phoenix also on that list. Under the dashboard, you certainly see that we're up two schools licensed. We're at 233 schools, up two from last meeting. There's a number of the institutions that are in a pending status. Currently, there's 12 schools that are in pending, and moving those to a point where they get to appear before the board, and we hope to have some of those in January that you'll see. We have 54 institutions that are up for renewal for the January renewal cycle. Those renewal applications are due on or before November 1st, which is next Tuesday. So we're tracking down some of the additional renewal applications at this time. And then you see the transcript requests. We've been pretty active in transcript requests that have been coming through for schools that have closed. I've added the service request and the number of service requests that we've been doing. You can see we've been very active with 192 new programs, a few change of locations, and a change of ownerships as well. And then the list of Ed monitoring schools on HCM has basically been unchanged since the last time that we met in August. Accreditation actions, I've attended a number of institutional accreditation visits. I listed them on there. Also had the opportunity to attend the DAC conference here that was located here in Scottsdale on Monday. It was great. We also did the Arizona SARA conference on Tuesday. In terms of a legislative update, obviously we're waiting for the elections to happen in November to determine what the makeup of the legislature is going to look like and who our governor will be. I've been saying some goodbyes to a number of people that are currently in appointed staff positions in the governor's office. There's a number of those folks that will be moving into different roles as a new governor comes in. I don't know what is it. November, December, and January are going to be very busy learning all the new folks that are going to be in the positions that will be supportive of the new administration coming in. We do have one board position that is still open. That's been open since Mr. Lubke left us in February. I've submitted all of the information of the four individuals I put forward. It clearly appears where we're at today is that they're going to wait until the new administration comes in January to start the process of moving any candidates forward. So as that happens, I will let you know. Are there any questions on the board report? All right, that's good. That's good for me. I'm done.
I do have a question and a comment. So the comment, first of all, was you had a busy week already with DIAC and then the SARA forum. And so I just also want to call out and acknowledge Dr. Leck and Grand Canyon University for hosting the SARA forum and for the participation there. It was really great. My question is, I believe just a couple of years ago, we were down to about 204, 207 schools. And what was kind of a high point over the last decade or so, Mr. LaMountain, or maybe Terry? You
know, Terry, maybe if you want to answer that, I know we're the highest we've been in at least 6 years, 7 years. I don't know what the overall largest number would have been. Terry?
I believe back in the day, we were up to 265.
Okay. Good. Well, I mean, it does show just how much work staff has to put in. So thank you for all the work that you guys do.
Thank you.
All right. Next up is review, discussion, and possible action on a couple of student tuition recovery fund claims. Mr. LeMond or Mr. Blanchard?
Yeah, Mr. Blanchard.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the State Board. We received two strife claims in reference to the closure of American Institute of Interior Design, one by a CE. Her name is in the report for your review. And GK, her name is in the report as well. Under GK, she submitted the 1098 form showing a payment of $4,270 to the institution. She also submitted Chase bank statements and another bank statement, which came to that total. As in most of these claims, the ledgers from the institution didn't show the enrollment fee, but the 1098T does show that amount, which would be looking for approval of $4,270 for GK. And on CE, the claim was for $1,343.10. I think there's maybe some questions in reference to the transcript showing withdrawals. Our statute really doesn't have specifics of what grades are. If they fail them or they're withdrawing, it really doesn't make any difference. It's just based on what evidence we can produce for you to review these. The ledger does show the debit for $1,343.10. There's an American Express charge, which is that exact amount. There is no credit of that in the ledger to show that it's a possibility that this was maybe not paid or refunded already. On the transcripts, it shows the last date of attendance is December 17th, which is the same date as the closure of the institution. If you have any questions or reference to the CE claim, which is for $1,343.10.
What I'll do is I'll ask for a motion and a second and then any discussion or questions. So can we have a motion to approve the strife claim for CE?
This is Susan Cardillo. I'll move to approve the strife claim for CE.
Thank you.
Do we want to, I believe we need to include the amount that we're making the motion for?
Correct.
You that way you get to make a you can second and make a friendly amendment, Ms. Cardullo's.
I will go ahead and second. This is Mike Romano for the amount of $13.43.10 for CE.
Ms. Cardullo, you accept Mr. Romano's friendly amendment?
Yes, it was very friendly.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Are there any questions for Mr. Blanchard or Mr. Blanchard, or any discussion on CE?
Dr. Mittman, I had a question. I'm not sure if it was covered or not. I apologize. I got booted off and just got back on. But on CE, I noticed that the grades on the transcript were W, which to me would indicate that they withdrew and weren't in the term at the end. So I'm trying to figure that out because there's another transcript I've seen that does have grades. Did you cover that?
Blanchard did touch upon that, so why don't we, if you can answer again, Mr. Blanchard.
Of course. I apologize.
No, hi, Dr. Leck. Yeah, so if it's a withdrawal or a failure on the transcripts, it really doesn't have any weight on approval of the strife claim.
Okay.
We use the ledge, and statute doesn't really give an indication of how to weigh that. We base it on what the ledger shows, which shows the debit of the $1,343, the verification of that payment through CE's American Express charge. And then upon closure, usually when the school does a refund, they would show that as a credit on the ledger. It doesn't show as a credit. So there's no other evidence we can go by other than them signing the strife claim saying that they were enrolled at the time. And his last date of attendance on the transcript is the same as the cease operation date of the institution of December 17, 2021. But I do understand the question.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, could we take the roll?
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By the vote of 6 ayes, no nays, the motion passes.
Great. Can we get a motion to approve the strife fund refund or strife fund disbursement to GK?
This is Susan Cardullo. I'll make a motion that we approve the strife fund refund claim for GK.
And don't forget to put the amount. Otherwise, you're going to have to, otherwise, Mr. Romano will have to insert.
Mr. Romano can help me with the second. Gotcha.
Yeah. I'll gladly help you with the second. Move us along and with the friendly amendment yet again of $4,270 for GK.
Okay. Great. Is there any other discussion about GK? Hearing none, let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for all the work on it, Mr. Blanchard and staff. Next up, review, discussion, and possible action to include but not limited to acceptance, rejection, or modification of the amended stipulated agreement for licensure between the ZPPSE board and Aspen University. Mr. LaMountain, can you give us, start us off?
Yes, Dr. Mittman, members of the board, if you recall back in August, during our August meeting, we had a conversation regarding some of the challenges with the Aspen University. We spent some time in executive session discussing a potential resolution to that. And we are now, after a number of many meetings over the last month and a half to 2 months, we have come up with what we believe is an agreement that is in best interest of the students of the university and of the state of Arizona. Just as a reminder, we met on the August 25th of 2022. Staff was instructed by board to negotiate an updated stipulated agreement, which we have done, and it is in your board packet, that integrates components of the numerous findings of facts discussed during the August 25th, 2022 board meeting. With overall goal to protect Aspen students and the STRF fund. We believe that agreement that is in front of you today is in the best interest of those groups. I've listed on the board report a number of changes that have happened over the last couple of months, including the Aspen University's decision on September 20th of 2022 to enter into the consent agreement by the Board of Nursing, which voluntarily surrendered their program approval for the registered nursing program in Phoenix, Arizona. That, if you recall, the discussion was there are also locations that are outside of the state of Arizona, and based upon Aspen's DEAC approval, those particular institutions were also impacted by this. So that surrender also included the surrender and the teaching out of the locations in Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, and Texas. I've attached a number of documents to your board report that reflects the status of each of those states and information that Aspen has provided about each one of those. Additional, in terms of the teach out, I provided the information there. We were on a number of phone calls with potential teach out partners and with Aspen regarding these students that are in the core program of the pre-licensure nursing. We'd also included in your folder financial information that is updated to include both the challenges, financial challenges at Aspen University Group or Aspen Group and Aspen University, the institution located in here in Arizona. And you may have questions about that, that I'm certainly that the institution can discuss. Ultimately our recommendation to the board is in there what the changes from the initial stipulated agreement to the agreement that's before you today is that there is a reduction of the bond from the $18 million bond to the $5.5 million. After further review and a lot of extensive review, it was determined that that $5.5 million would certainly serve to protect the students in the state of Arizona and the state itself if there were a closure, a precipitous closure. There is also a civil penalty included there for each of the findings of fact and the violations, and that totals $12,000. The teach out of the BSN pre-licensure core program, which that matches the stipulated agreement from the Arizona State Board of Nursing, so it mirrors that. So our agreement looks similar to the Board of Nursing's, and then we added the additional findings of fact. And I know Dr. St. Arnold is on, and Mr. Garner, who is their legal counsel, is also available to answer any questions for the board. Dr. Mittman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mountain. And just the changes to the stipulated agreement, you can find them on page 10 and 11 of the new stipulated or the revised stipulated agreement. Dr. St. Arnold and Mr. Garner, do you care to share some statements?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Mittman, members of the board. Dave Garner here, counsel for Aspen, and again, Dr. St. Arnold is on as well. We don't have anything substantive to add to Mr. LaMountain's remarks or summary other than to confirm that we've appreciated the opportunity to work with the board staff and acknowledge the productive dialogue that Mr. LaMountain referenced. We're very optimistic that the proposed agreement before you will avoid the need for a hearing in this matter. We got from Mr. LaMountain sent over to us the latest version of this yesterday afternoon. We had a chance to look at it. There are a couple of very minor things that we would change. Most of them are non-substantive and have to do with my background as an English teacher in terms of just some spacing and punctuation and things. The only potentially semi-substantive thing that we would ask the board to consider is on the financial reporting. Right now, the agreement talks about a monthly reporting, and just because Aspen closes its books on a quarterly basis, we would suggest leaving open that in terms of whatever you might approve to be able to wordsmith that if a quarterly reporting would be acceptable, just because there won't be an update substantively every month on that. Otherwise, again, we're appreciative of the productive dialogue and look forward to hopefully putting this matter in the past and moving forward on behalf of students and in the board's interest as well going forward. So thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Garner. Questions from the board?
This is Mike Romano. Just out of curiosity, are you saying you don't prepare monthly financial statements in your organization and only do that on a quarterly basis?
I think it's Dr. St. Arnold.
No, go ahead, David.
It's just my understanding that's what they close out the financials and on a quarterly basis, and so that would be that would be the most accurate information about what the financial status of the institution is.
Dr. Mittman, I'll leave it to you as chair of the finance committee of, you know, whether monthly makes sense, even though they're obviously not closing out on a quarterly basis, or they're closing out on a quarterly basis. I think monthly is still some level of indication. I was just kind of curious about that standpoint. Could the school maybe give us some perspective on, you know, just how you see this kind of playing out over the next couple of years and, you know, and adjusting the business model as a result of that, if at all?
Are you referring to monthly reporting versus quarterly?
I'm just speaking to the fact of relinquishing the license and the impact that that's had, at least from the financial statements already, and what that looks like moving forward for you.
I really think that this particular program was one program of many, and it was a very small portion of our total student body. So while it's been a significant impact to us, I think that we have already seen that impact, and the teaching out of the students that we have left in our core program is probably not going to make a significant impact on us financially. That's already happened with the closing of the pre-licensure programs almost a year ago now. In terms of the monthly reporting, our courses are 8 weeks long, so it's every other month that we actually have a change in our financials, and I think that's one of the reasons why they were asking about that monthly you wouldn't see significant, although we do keep monthly budget to actuals for expenses for sure. But I think it's really taking a look at revenue coming in is not going to impact monthly.
Thank you. Mr. Romano, any follow-ups?
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to track just based on the first quarterly information that was provided in our deck, showing kind of a net loss for Aspen as a whole. And I'm not a financial expert by any means, but I was just trying to get perspective of, I guess that's a one-time result of this, or you see that as not being ongoing, or?
Well, I think that there will be a recoup time, but I don't think that this is going to impact us over the year. I do think we'll be recouping over the year. We've taken down our marketing spend month over month. So, you know, there is an impact there. But we do still have enrollments every month, and I do see us recouping. We've also taken, you know, a reduction in our workforce, which was very hard to do, but it was something that we did in order to rebalance the university as a whole. So I see within the end of the year that we will be recouped and back, and we have some plans for additional programming that we'll bring forth both to our accreditor and to this board when the time is appropriate. So, you know, I see us recouping from this.
Thank you for that. I appreciate the additional clarity on that particular piece. Can you give us maybe a little perspective of how this is being digested by the students based on the announcement and what that looks like?
Our current student are our online students, and we just had our graduation about 2 weeks ago. We had 400 students here in the Valley and 2,000 of their families, and there wasn't one question at all about any of this. So, you know, we had a few of our pre-licensure students in that group, but the majority of our graduates are our online students, and they come from our School of Education, our School of Business, and our graduate programs in the School of Nursing. So I have not seen a lot of fallout with the teach out program and moving students and transitioning them. We have had, you know, some, but our advising team is exceptional, and we very quickly provided alternatives to those students, and many, many states were willing to work with us for our currently enrolled students through this era. So I just don't see so far in our end of course surveys and our data and surveys and our climate surveys with our students that we have had significant overall impacts.
Thank you for that as well. I appreciate the perspective in regards to the students. I also want to just say, you know, listen, this has been a long road, and this school has been very responsive. There's certainly been some missteps, but I think there's always been that intent of trying to try and get back on the right path for success of the students. And so I just wanted to acknowledge your efforts here in this forum as well, and extend my appreciation for that. I think it's the obligation of a school to do that, but you've been attentive and coming forward and trying to resolve it. I didn't know if you had any final learnings, you know, trying to get to the 80% pass rate, and at times it felt more optimistic. I didn't know if you had any final takeaways or learnings from that piece of maybe why that was just not able to be accomplished in that time frame that you could share.
Yes, Mr. Romano, thank you for that. I think, as I stated in our last meeting, that we had done research on our admission requirements, and I think the missteps happened there. I think that we had a lot of students who were able to take the entrance exam several times, and we have already made that change. Not that it matters anymore because we're in full teach out now, but we made that change. And as you know, there what 2 quarters is not really enough time to see the significant change of that. I do hope that by the time we are finished with the teach out, that we will be able to demonstrate, as most educational institutions know, it takes a little more than, you know, six months to make a significant change. But what I will tell you is that we have graduated approximately 285 nurses into the community, and that for our overall, as of today, while it's not what Arizona goes on, and I understand that, but for CCNE, they do allow total overall test scores, and we're still at 83% there. So I'm pleased about that. What I've seen in our current student core population is there's a lot of test anxiety. A lot of our students go out and give it a try and then come back and work with us. And I think that's what you're seeing in the scores. They're low scores for first time. They come back. They work with us. We're committed to working with them, you know, as long as it takes. And they go back out in second, sometimes third time, and are passing. And so that's why we see the 83% overall. But hopefully by the time we finish, that we will finish strong, and that you will see that as an educational institution that we can meet our outcomes. I just don't feel like we that enough time had gone by to really see the impact of the curricular changes that we made.
Thank you for that, Ms. St. Arnold. And thank you, Mr. Gardner, as well. That's all the questions I have.
Other board members, any other questions? So one thing, I'm not sure if you mentioned it, Mr. LaMountain, but in the August meeting, we had also recommended probation for the university. That was removed as well. And I just want to point that out, that, you know, that that's not part of the stipulated agreement, and that's not something that will be on the PPSC website. I guess the question regarding financial reporting, you know, as the from a finance committee standpoint, we only see quarterly financials. However, for most schools, especially small schools, you know, we're not seeing audited financials anyway, and so it may be of value more to staff to see budget to actuals. And I'll, so my question for you, Mr. LaMountain, is would that be beneficial, or do you feel that quarterly, you know, full sets of quarterly financials would be, would would suffice.
Well, that's a good question. certainly the budget to actual on a monthly rolling basis would be extremely helpful. But that's not, if we're not able to get that, if they're not able to produce that, then
That those are, Dr. St. Arnold said that those are produced on a regular basis. I think just my understanding is, you know, the full set of financials with balance sheet, income statement, and cash flow would not be.
Those are internal documents. Yeah.
Those are, I'm sorry, Dr. St. Arnold?
They're internal working documents for the university. Yeah.
Right. Obviously, the concern from staff and from the board is the impact and what the impact of this teach out is having on the institution. So is as quickly as we can get updated financial and the you know, on a monthly basis is really something that we can continue to monitor, so that if we see a concern month two, month three, we can perhaps have conversations about it, so that by the time we get to another meeting where Aspen will be in front of the board, that we'll already, you know, from a staff level, we'll be able to provide the best possible guidance to the board. So my preference is on a monthly basis with that type of information. However, Dr. Mittman and the board, if you feel that the best is on a quarterly, do that as well.
Yeah. Why don't we do this? Okay. The stipulated agreement refers to the financial status of Aspen University and Aspen Group. It doesn't specify that it needs to be a full set of financial statements. And so if we could leave it as written, could Mr. Brown, can you and staff work with Dr. Fitzgerald and her team to come up with something that is useful for the board and not onerous for the university?
Absolutely, Dr. Mittman and members of the board, we would absolutely work. And I will tell you, our relationship has been very developing and is in a much better place over the last few months than it was prior. So we have had a very good line of open communication with the institution, with Dr. St. Arnold, with Mr. Garner, and others. So we appreciate that. And I'm confident that we can work something out that we're all comfortable with as we monitor the financial progress of the institution.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, if there are no other questions, comments, or interruptions, I'll make a motion to accept the amended stipulated agreement, the licensure between AZPPSC board and Aspen University. Can I get a second?
Chair Mittman, before that, I know that Mr. Gardner said he did have some grammar and possible edits he wanted to make. Is the board okay with that? I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I was a creative writing major, but I get it.
I don't know. Dr. St. Arnold, are you okay with that? Because it means more work on your guys' part.
We'll work with Mr. Gardner.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Can we get a second, please?
This is Mike Romano. I'll second.
All right, let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We have pending license applications. Review, discussion, possible action on the following. So first, we have two that fall under finance committee approval, regular licenses. And first up is Arizona School of Integrated Studies.
Good morning, everybody. This is Laura Todd, Regional Director. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, as you can hear.
Hi. So we just closed out our audit, as you guys are aware. We forwarded a copy to the board. We feel like it was a successful audit with our new auditing team. We were really excited to work with them, and I think it's going to be a good long-term relationship with our new auditors. The good things that came out of the audit is our composite score has increased to 2.6, which is a huge jump, as you guys probably know, on the finance committee. We're at 65% on our 90-10 calculation. We have approximately $1 million in our operating accounts. We did recently receive, in September, formal approval for our hybrid program. And teaching model through June 30th of 2025. So we were excited about that as well from CompTIA. And then our creditor, and then our letter of credit with DOE is at approximately $945,000 right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
So I guess first off, congratulations. You know, just comparing the last couple of years. And also, I think you had a restatement in a previous audit. And so it looks like the material weaknesses that came up in previous audits have been addressed. And so good job on that, and good job on the financial performance overall.
Thank you.
And for the letter of credit, will that take another year of financial another audit before that can either be adjusted or released?
This is Shannon Yerkeek, the Chief Executive Officer. No, actually, the letter of credit, we are currently working with the department. We selected an increase in the letter of credit per the department's request in July, and we got confirmation from the department that pending the audit that we just submitted, that any financial reporting we are immediately removed of because of our ability to fund the increase that was requested. And we've already, Anna Perez with the Department of Education, we've corresponded with requesting an immediate review with the submission of the current audit and the 2.6 composite score with the 19 calculation and the fact that we're not on any formal financial reporting due to the actions taken in July of a review and reduction or formal complete release of the 946 letter of credit that the department currently has. So Ms. Perez has that under review. We're hopeful that we will hopefully get that back by year's end. We've been successful in the past receiving reductions and receiving back our letter of credits when we compliantly and adequately shut down our former institutions in the East Coast. So it's a methodology and a process that we've worked with the department on previously, and we're optimistic that we can expedite this pretty quickly because of the financial scores and our financial capability within the organizations.
Great. Congratulations. A question that I'll probably have for a bunch of schools is, you know, I know that in the audit that you submitted, I'm pretty sure that it included PPP funding was recognized there. And I wonder how much of an impact, you know, that ultimately that became revenue or recognized as revenue after the loans were forgiven. This was the case for everybody, present company included. And so what impact will not having a source of revenue like the PPP loan or the HERF funds for that matter have as you're going forward now that we're about halfway through your academic and fiscal year?
Yeah, I'll let my corporate controller, Damien Ashamba, who's also on the call, kind of speak to some of it. Regarding the PPP funding in its direct, we've been able to make up and actually increase our operational count, both from cash flow and earnings perspective, even without that infusion from the PPP side. And overall, it's got to do with the profitability of the entire organization as a whole and its ability to really use the pandemic as an opportunity. And a lot of that has to do with what Laura mentioned. We got formal approval from COMPTA, which is our accreditor, on continuing with our distant learning education platform, which is the hybrid model in our classrooms. And we've gotten better in being more efficient in the way that we market and kind of attract our student candidates to our campus locations and the way that we ultimately deliver our educations. So overall, from my perspective, I'll let Damien speak to the financials. The organization in its entirety has done a good job weathering the storm of obviously COVID and what occurred, and then finding unique and getting the approvals in place to continue that model for the coming years. But I'll let Damien speak to the financial reporting coming out of the audit. Damien?
Hello, it's Damien Ashamba. Actually, we had received the PPP forgiveness and it was recorded in our prior year audited financials. So we have succeeded in continuing to maintain cash flow throughout this more recent fiscal year. And we don't see any potential issues for it changing.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Other questions from board members?
This is Mike Romano. I was noticing in the audit on page 15, a pretty significant increase year over year on the advertising costs. And I was just wondering if maybe you could provide some color around that.
Sure, absolutely. So ultimately, in regards to our increase in advertising, we are working very diligently to kind of expand and grow the campus locations. Obviously, under COVID, we scaled back because of the uncertainty and ensuring that we have reserves in its ability to maneuver as we feel more comfortable. And we've seen our enrollments and our the overall market kind of adjust back to normal operations with our clinics as well as the school. We've deployed capital not only to promote the academic aspects but also the clinical aspects, so the students have a robust public interest in order to demonstrate skills, techniques, strategies on the public. So that the marketing cost is combined both with obviously recruitment, but also the expansion of clinical services in the community to help assure that we have a large quantity of individuals that our students can work on and employ their techniques and strategies.
Some of the marketing initiatives that we focused on last year were more branding and name recognition as well, on top of what Shannon said. And those campaigns have come to a natural end, so that many of those campaigns we're no longer participating in because they've kind of created the benefit that we've needed as well. So we'll see a reduction in that next year.
And also with the return back to a high school market, we've deployed capital earlier for the saturation, understanding that as high schools have allowed us back, incrementally onto their locations or back at conferences that are occurring, we've deployed capital for promotional items and for advertisements and then for, branding and so forth in those verticals that in previous years we pulled back on due to the reluctance of schools along on-site or conventions for student graduates. So deploying that across the board is why you're seeing the ramp up as we look to kind of grow our institutions and then kind of give back to the communities.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it. That was it for me.
Okay. Any other questions? So hearing none, I will move to approve the regular degree granting license and maintain the $200,588 surety bond. Can I get a second,
please? I'll second. Dr. Leck.
Thank you, Dr. Leck. And assuming that we vote in the affirmative, Ms. Todd and Mr. Yurchik, you agree to the stipulations? essentially this.
I do.
Of course, yes.
Okay. All right, then let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
You too. Have a great day, everyone.
Bye.
All right. Next up, Fuller Theological Seminary. Mr. LeMountain, do you have any introductory comments, or should I just...
Just go ahead. Yeah.
And this is for a renewal application. And Ms. Lewis, are you here? Would you like to make an opening statement?
Dr. Mittman, this is Ray aside. Let me jump in if I may. Good morning, Dr. Mittman and members of the board. I'm Raymond Assad, the Chief Financial Officer for Fuller. We've met a few times in the Finance Committee conversations. So we're here with you this morning with two of my colleagues, Ms. Teresa Lewis, who's Director of Compliance, and Ms. Jenny Rasmussen, who's the Director of our regional campus in Phoenix. So they're with me on the call in case we have more questions. we provided the committee and the board a summary, and I hope you've had the opportunity to read through that and a sense of the finances through March of 2022. Today, as we speak, literally, we've just signed our management representation letter for last fiscal year's audit. So we expect the audited financial statements to be issued, sometime this afternoon. With that, I'm happy to share with you for the second consecutive year, we will have a surplus from operating activities for the seminary in the tune of $1 million surplus. On the financial statements, you will note that the financial performance, largely due to, financial markets performance, has declined significantly with respect to our investments and the endowment that we have. But it's essentially an offset to the positive performance that we saw the prior fiscal year. So you will note that there will be a deficit as a result of unrealized losses from financial investments, but that has no impact or any bearing on operations and the financial performance from operating activities. We did very well with our campaign, $150 million campaign. We're almost on the tail end of it. We have about $25 million left to raise. So we've made some significant gains on, with our capital campaign. I've previously mentioned, at least in the Finance Committee, that we've received a generous gift specifically for our regional campus in Phoenix to develop the Phoenix, expand it, the campus and expand it, which we did. We expanded our facility there, and we are working on opening a counseling center to serve the community and potentially other counseling centers, in the region to provide services to the community. So, and this is for mental health, by the way. If you recall, our main degree program is Master's in Family Therapy, the School of Psychology, and we also are planning to introduce other new degree programs, over the next couple of years, including theology. So I will pause here and just allow for some interaction and dialogue, and happy to respond to any questions you might have. So,
well, thank you very much, Mr. Assad. And for board members not on the Finance Committee, Mr. Assad shared a fair amount of this at our last Finance Committee meeting. And so I'll just say congratulations on another good year. You already addressed the main question that I was going to ask, which was the effect of the stock market. Because I know that you had big gains,
yes,
like almost $28 million.
That's right.
Years.
Yes.
I assume that, I'll refrain from making any jokes about giveth and taketh away. For the board's assurances, the endowment is north of $100 million. And so
that's correct.
I think with a composite score well over 2, I think the seminary has, plenty of buffer to absorb a loss, from the stock market.
And if I could add one clarification.
Yeah.
So the composite score, in accordance with the U.S. Department of Education, based on the last fiscal year that we've just audited, we are at 2.7. So we've actually come up from 2.63 the prior year, where, we're up at 2.7. 3 years ago it was 1.8. So you can see the trend and the progress we've made over time. I would also add that in the calculation of that composite score, there is no, it doesn't take into account any of the unrealized gains or losses. So that's totally out of the formula, the equation. It looks at expendable assets.
So you're saying that the investments do not show up in the composites?
Only if they are realized and they actually become. So under U.S. GAAP, you have to report your financial gains or losses, realized and unrealized, right? So the bulk of what we're talking about is really unrealized, but we have to reflect it on the financial. So it's not necessarily material until you actually sell, your investment and realize the gain or loss.
Okay. So it shows up on the income statement, but it does not get calculated into the composite score.
Yeah.
Good. You could see me smiling because I don't know.
Because
the other person here whose institution lost money on its endowment, but I'm glad to know that.
Well, but we haven't lost it yet. So.
Our auditors have any questions, Mr. Assad, I'm going to refer them to you. And then also, you mentioned your comprehensive campaign. I noticed, I think, 2 years in a row, $4 million of contributions from trustees, which prompted me to look at your board of trustees. And so congratulations.
Thank you.
We could leave it there as well.
And thank you, Doctor.
I don't have any other questions. Debt is down. Year over year, I think the seminary retired over $11 million of debt.
About 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I have no other questions. Any other questions from the board? Okay. Well, the fact that Mr. Wallace, who's our CPA on the board, didn't jump in and contradict you on the that's a good sign. That's a good sign for all of us.
I'll take all the good signs.
All right. So with that, unless there are any other questions or comments, I will move to approve the regular degree granting license and maintain the $53,907 surety bond. Can I get a second, please?
I'll second that. That's Scott Wallace.
Okay. And Mr. Assad, does the seminary agree to the stipulation, essentially the surety bond?
Yes, I do agree, Dr. Mittman.
Okay. And let's vote.
Yeah.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Have a nice day. You too. Thanks. Okay, we move into the dental assisting portion of our meeting today. And we'll start with Accelerated Dental Assisting Academy. Unless Mr. LaMountain, you have any introductory remarks, I will invite Ms. LaRue and Ms. Jinx to share any opening comments. So hearing none, go for it.
Okay,
hello everyone.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's been, I think I missed the last board meeting. And so from a protocol standpoint, my apologies. Hold on a second, Ms. LaRue or Ms. Jinx. Our board lead is Ms. Cardullo. And so I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Cardullo. I'm going to hit mute.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. I just wanted to make sure everyone felt the extra warm welcome of two board members greeting them. And I wanted to just confirm which of you were here today. So please proceed with a summary.
Yes, absolutely. First off, we just wanted to thank y'all so much for reviewing Accelerated Dental Assisting Academy. My name is Lexi LaRue, and I am the Director of Dental Assisting here.
And I'm also here. My name's Emily Jinx. I'm the Director of Operations. So we're here together.
We wanted to say thank you to Keith Blanchard, Kim Darling, Kevin LaMountain, and Terry Stanfield, who have helped us through the licensing and renewal process, which has brought us here today. Thank you to the commission for your time and the dedication to post-secondary education. A little bit of background about us is that Dr. Jared Benkaz purchased his first dental office in 2007. He began growing very quickly and had a shortage of dental assistants in the area to hire. In 2011, we started our first school and named it Accelerated Dental Assisting Academy at our main dental office located here in Denham Springs, Louisiana. This helped staff his 4 dental offices, and he was never in need of quality candidates. Dr. Benkaz had several surrounding dentists ask if we could help them run a school, and in 2015, we started a turnkey model. We now have over 65 active locations across 18 states. We partner with practicing dental offices to host our dental assisting schools during their non-operational hours. We were approved to operate our first school in Yuma, Arizona on September 27, 2001. We did not host our first course, however, until spring of 2022. The program has been well received with our Yuma enrollments at capacity each semester. We offer an affordable, convenient, and achievable way for students to obtain basic dental assisting skills in the dental field. We have life coaching built into our program to help them become good employees, and we also have a career services department that helps students become prepared for the workforce, but we do not guarantee a job. Our career coach begins communicating with the students during week 3 of each course. She mentors them through building resumes, doing interview prep, helping them with job searching, and gaining more experience by obtaining job shadowing opportunities. The career services program is housed on our learning management system, Canvas, along with other teaching modules that students can access 24/7 online throughout the duration of the program and after. For this renewal timeframe, the number of confirmed hires is 7 from our spring and summer 22 semesters. We feel confident that there are more, but many fail to respond to our follow-up correspondence once class ends. We hold 3 courses a year, and the course is 10 weeks long, a total of 80 hours, 10 Saturdays for 8 hours. Each class day is broken into a 4-hour lecture component and a 4-hour clinical component. When students graduate, they will have their CPR certification, their certificate of completion in dental assisting, and they should be prepared to take the RHS exam. In an effort to help the students prepare for the RHS exam, we provide each student with online access to the Dale Foundation's Danby RHS online review course. The student is required to have a 70% overall grade average and an attendance grade of 70% to pass our course. In the past, we've used online digital marketing to enroll our students across all locations. Our current average enrollment per location nationwide is 13 students per course with a max of 16. Since the renewal was for the calendar year of 2021 and we were approved to operate in late September of 2021, we collected $27,855 in income. There was little expense except for the cost to get the license and some digital marketing. Our first course did not start until January 2022, when we began paying the lease, paying our instructors, paying for supplies. Therefore, Arizona budget projections using an average of 13 students at $3,579 per student for three courses is an income of $139,581. Subtracting corporate and site-specific expenses, we hope to yearly profit approximately $45,381. Our research for needs and feasibility in the Yuma area showed a saturation of dentists in the area and little to no competition in affordable dental assisting programs. We have determined that the area is under-resourced and continuing our program here would benefit the area. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Ms. LaRue and Ms. Jinks. So I wanted to say I'm so privileged to be the board member liaison or lead for this because you all were at my very first board meeting last August. Yeah, and I was there to vote and approve your initial application. And since then, your website is so impressive and your catalog is so impressive. I've read all your materials. I just had a few questions or points of clarification. On the website, so your explanation just now was spot on for what happens when they complete the course, that they will, part of course completion is includes their BLS or their CPR, and it includes your certificate, your dental assistant certificate. But you said it prepares you for the RHS exam, and you still have to sit for that. I did notice on your website, it says when you get done with this program, you have all three of those things. And I think you don't automatically have your RHS. So I just wanted to make sure that that's not misleading to a potential student. Take a look at that. I know that the radiologic board, you know, there's the whole other layer of that and dental boards as well. So only other comment I had was, or question was about, in your catalog, it says counseling. There is no counseling. Do you mean that as like official, like a psychiatric medical term counseling? Because do you do advising still?
So we do have our career coach that's available throughout the course of the semester to offer guidance. We also have on our Canvas account, we have what's called a student counseling form. So should a student have like a grievance or a complaint, they're able to go and fill those out. But as far as you were saying, just like offering counseling services, no.
Okay. One thing I can tell you, since if you're from out of state, I know in Arizona we have something called Arizona 211, for instance. There's various resources like that that are, you can at least refer them to community resources.
Right.
That would be a recommendation I would have. And still mentioning, I know it skips right from we have no counseling and here's the grievance process to some middle ground would be nice to show some type of student services or assistance.
Of course. We've noted that.
Okay, thank you. For my fellow board members, does anyone else have any questions for Accelerated Dental Assisting Academy?
Picking up where Ms. Carula left off in regards to the website, and this is just as lead for the complaints committee for the state here. Sensitivity around when you call out job and wages and those, and trying to reference where that's coming from. So on your main site page, you call out, you know, the job outlook, the median pay, hourly pay, and then the number of dental assisting jobs. A best practice is usually citing where you're getting that information from, so that as if students were to bring that up later as a point of contention, you can at least draw back to the fact that it wasn't two students you talked to that drove that type of determination, which I know it's not, but we found that to be a best practice. So I just share that with you for awareness to help you out and avoid showing up in front of the complaints committee anytime soon. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We'll make notes of all these things for our website team.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Romano. Any other board members or staff have any comments they need to add? Okay, hearing none, I'd like to make a motion
to approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational program license application of Accelerated Dental Assisting Academy with the stipulation that they maintain a $15,000 surety bond.
This is Mike Arano, I'll second.
And Dr. Mittman, should I ask my friends here if they're amenable to maintaining the surety bond?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Ms. LaRue, Ms. Jinx, are you amenable to maintaining the surety bond with that stipulation?
We are.
Okay. Time to vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By the vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Congratulations.
Thank you all so much. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, next up, coding clarified, and our board lead is Mr. Ball. Getting the hang of it.
Mr. Ball, I believe you're on mute.
Sorry about that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do we have Ms. Mothershed here?
Yes, sir. Hello.
Would you like to make a opening statement?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm Janine Mothershed, the founder and president of Coding Clarified. We're here today to review our conditional license and switch on over to our second year with you guys. We appreciate your structure and helping us, so thank you in that. The renewal process is a lot easier than the initial. So we were pleasantly surprised with that, and we're just an online medical coding school. Little background is I come from a little bit less fortunate circumstances, and I was able to receive a grant long back when. And so ultimately what happened was I became a coder, and I was able to support myself and my children for the first time without state assistance and so forth. So what I've kind of gone to do is begin teaching and then opening the Coding Clarified School, and ultimately being able to become licensed with you has enabled us to give your community grants. And with that, we are sitting at an 84% completion rate, and we don't have one person that's gone through the steps and they're unemployed. So United Healthcare just came in and swooped every last coder we had that was certified, remote, work from home, $22 to $24 an hour. I know you guys have talking a little bit about like the pandemic, and our school was originally set up to be remote and online and virtual. So it really didn't touch us. It just kind of drove our revenue, as you can probably tell if you have the financials. So we're thankful for that. And that's really about it. Does anybody have any questions?
Well, I just have a couple questions.
Okay.
I noticed you submitted your balance sheet as of June 30th, 2022. Mm-hmm. It was cash basis, but you show current liabilities of $70,000. So do you know how it would come to be that you would have a current liability on a cash basis financial statement?
That I don't know. I don't do the accounting. I could ask my accountant and get back with you.
Well, that's okay. How about, do you know what the other assets are of $48,000?
$46,000, $43,000, I guess. I don't know.
Because you don't show accounts receivable, which is understandable on a cash basis.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just curious what that $43,000 is of other current assets.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I could ask her and send it over. So.
Okay. Because I think we'd like to see accrual basis financial statements, not cash basis.
Okay. I'll tell her accrual.
Yeah. I notice on the December 31st, 2021 balance sheet, that is accrual basis. So we see $64,000 of accounts receivable. And then how do you recognize revenue? Do you recognize it hourly as the students go through the course, or you know how you do that?
You mean like if like pertaining to refund or?
Well, let's say the tuition is how much?
$37.50 with everything.
$37.50, and that covers how many weeks or how many hours?
80 hours.
Okay, so a student could start and finish within a month.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could overlap between months.
Yeah, because it's self-paced. So everyone, you know, is a little different. Sometimes Sally has four kids, no husband, whereas Bobby Joe works full-time, doesn't have any kids. But ultimately, they have up to a year time online to complete those 80 hours of coursework.
And how do they report their hours to you?
When they log in, each chapter takes anywhere from 8 to 12 hours of study time. So when they log in, they just look at the videos and watch those and then read their textbook. And then they will take exams online, chapter quizzes, practical applications, things of that nature.
Okay.
And it'll tell us timestamps and dates and time, you know, date and time.
Right. So what makes up your contract labor?
Oh, that is not going to be associated with the school. We also have different divisions. So there's we have a coding company that we do coding for all over the United States. So that is where you have the coding income TCN income. That's going to be the amounts that are offset by the contract labor.
Okay. So for the first 6 months of 2022, it looks like the coding income was less than your contract labor.
TCN income.
Because you got about $180,000 of coding income, $206,000 or $208,000 of contract labor. So
that's because I include, like, for instance, Sharon Linz, she's on the call. She's the director of the operational workforce division of Coding Clarify, which is part of the school. So that's going to include the contract labor for both.
Okay.
And she also does a little bit of coding because she is a CPC as well.
Okay. Your enrollment agreement is pretty understandable.
Thank you.
Your refund policy is straightforward.
Kevin helped me out with that.
Yeah. So
he was asking me, what happens when this and what happens when that? I'm like, I don't know. And then, you know, so I had to go back and make it up so that I would be covered. So I appreciated that because I feel like it's a little bit extra security on my end.
Yeah, he's a big help, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to open it up to any other board members for any questions they might have. Any questions? Hearing none, I'll make a motion to approve the regular non-accredited vocational program license for Coding Clarified with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond remain in place. Okay, we have a first and a second. Do you agree to the stipulation about the bond?
Yes.
Okay. I guess we can have a vote then.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Sister Romano?
Aye.
Sister Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. For the vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Congratulations, Ms. Mother.
Yeah, it's a really big day for us.
Yeah.
We continue to strive for you guys.
Yeah. Hey, I did notice that the financials that I was looking at are on an accrual basis. So I think, maybe Mr. Ball and I have been looking at different documents. I would, at the risk of sounding paternalistic about this, I would really recommend that you get kind of a primer on financial statements, because it sounds like, you know, from what I could see, you've got a great business. It's doing really well, and it's surprising how it's not that complicated. Most people shy away from paying attention to that kind of detail, but for the kind of overall well-being and growth of your school, I recommend that you get it. And there's some books like Financial Statements Made Simple or things like that. And if you ask Mr. LaMountain, he's got one right there, How to Read a Financial Report. That was something that Mr. Wallace and the board did at a national meeting. And it's the kind of thing that it would really, I think it would really help accelerate your growth as you become, more and more successful. So again, congratulations. My apologies if it sounds a little bit preachy about it, but.
Not at all. I agree. I should know what this stuff means. It's just when I look at it, I'm like, it's just all these different numbers and probably more.
Hey, well, if you could figure out the CPT coding, then this other stuff should be, a cakewalk for you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, Dental Assistant Academy, and Dr. Lex, this is you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mittman. Would someone, a representative from the Dental Assistant Academy, like to make an opening statement?
Do we have
Ms. Caitlin?
Doherty? She's on.
Yeah, I saw her earlier.
We're moving so quick, she must have felt like she had a little more time.
Ms. Doherty, are you on? I see you here.
No, we can't hear you.
We cannot hear.
You know what? Whoever knows the right, if you're on a cell phone, you're going to have to hit like *6 once or twice.
Should just be once.
Okay. All right. That's why we have an assistant attorney general with us.
to help us with the technology. Yes, we do.
Yeah, IT support and legal support all in one.
Seamus is the whole package. Yes, if you can, there's a phone number that's listed on that. If you just log off of this and then go on to your phone, that would be helpful.
Okay. Why don't we do this? Why don't we move on?
Perfect.
To Dental Assisting Academy. All right. Phoenix Masonry School. So I think all of these came up initially for conditional licensure a year ago. So Ms. Cardullo, is this like your inaugural cohort?
Yeah, this is my favorite day of board service today, because it's all coming full circle. Everyone that we saw last year is coming back, and And as Ms. Mother should mention, this step is hopefully easier for them than the first one was.
Okay. I'm impressed that you can remember that.
Hopefully it doesn't get to becoming all a blur for you at some point. So
that's where you are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yep. I know I've seen this before. I can't remember when.
Yeah. Actually, I had the Phoenix Masonry School last year this time, and I have it this time again, and I'm super excited about that, just to hear how things have progressed overall. So, Mr. Lamont, do you have any updates that you would like to provide prior to me turning it over to Mr. Cummins or Mr. Sin?
Mr. Romano, there's no additional updates. All of the information is provided in your board act.
Wonderful. Do we have any representation from the Phoenix Masonry School?
Yes. Hi, good morning. This is Philip Sin. I'm the Director of Operations for Phoenix Masonry School. Very excited here to give you guys an update on our years, how it's been going, and kind of give you guys a little bit of information on moving forward. Mr. Charles Cummins, our founder, he's also our lead instructor, so he's a little busy today with his hands full, you know, getting work done. Somebody's got to build stuff around here. But so this is our first renewal that we're doing, going into our second year of operation. We're excited at the response that we've had from other individuals that are in the industry. We've partnered with contractors and employers that are very excited for graduates of our program. We even have some contractors and employers that have expressed interest in even hiring our students prior to their completing the program. And as we're open entry, open exit, you know, students can attend at their own pace. And so we're excited at developing programs like that. We've also been partnering with local NPOs and NGOs, seeing as the construction industry and the masonry industry is good for people that are looking to build their lives or rebuild their lives as well, too, and provides quite a bit of opportunity for people looking, you know, to move on to that next step in their life. And our goal being that we're a very, very small school, and we're kind of we're the only masonry school in Arizona and the Southwest, possibly in the whole of the U.S. So we are really trying to build something here to last. And so thank you for having us here. I do want to thank the board and specifically Mr. LaMontagne and also Ms. Stanfield for all of their help in this process.
They are extremely helpful, so we appreciate that recognition of them. I only have a few questions I wanted to kind of tackle. I wanted to make sure I was reading some of the information right. At this point, at least in the information provided, it showed zero students thus far. Is that an accurate statement?
That's correct. At the time that we completed all of the renewal paperwork, that is correct. As of now, we have one student that has completed their program. We have two students that will be graduating in November, and we have a total enrollment right now of 9 students.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. It was kind of leading me to when I was on your website. It seems like there's pictures of students and even testimonials, if you will, of what seemed to be a graduate. One of which was, I think, a truck driver that elevated out into the career. So I was just trying to verify that's reflective of the school versus, I guess, something that's more manufactured for the website.
Sure. I know. So that one testimony, that is that first student, Chaz, who came all the way from Tennessee to attend our program, actually. So we've had a lot of interest from people that are out of state, even just due to the fact that we're probably the only people offering this program at the time. And yes, those are also pictures of our actual students as well, too. We also do like free workshops as well, too, for people that are interested in the masonry program that want to come out and try their hand at masonry, prior to going through all the steps and motions to attend our school as well, too. So some of those pictures are from people from our workshops that we do, our free workshops that we offer.
No, that makes sense, too. And yeah, I love the fact that you give them that 3-day kind of try it out type of a thing, because it's a skill and it's an art to do masonry type work. And so really impressive, but very much needed, that type of education. So great to see from that standpoint. I know I probably sound like a broken record to a certain degree, because I always seem to pick at, you know, comments or those things on websites and that type of stuff. But we bring it forward really to try and help help the school understand, and as well as try and put the best foot forward for students as well who would be considering this type of education. In one area, you just area of sensitivity, you call out, our teachers are the best in the field. And so those are sometimes issues that can come up. I recall very clearly last year, Mr. Cummins, and the passion he had and then working knowledge he has. So he is very, very qualified. I recall that very clearly, but just caution in regards to, claiming best and those types of things. Again, they may be asked to be substantiated, and that may become difficult for the institution to be able to do that. Okay?
Yes, I will make note of that. To give a little bit of an enlightenment into Mr. Cummins' history, so he began as a Mason apprentice back in 1963, began contracting in 1974. He's worked on large projects like the Sheridan Hotel in Alaska, military bases, hospitals, schools, etc. He began teaching masonry in 1985, and he's been doing this for a while. And we really focus a lot of our course from his knowledge on the ergonomics of masonry, which is how to save your body from the wear and tear that obviously a very physically demanding skill requires. But yes, I will make note of that. And then also to note, we have also joined the Arizona Private School Association to make sure that as we grow and as we expand, we do so in a way that is correct and, by the book, and make sure that we're doing everything accordingly.
We appreciate that. That's a great resource for you as well. And certainly Mr. Cummins left a memorable impression on me last year of his passion, his knowledge, and his understanding of the workplace. Just again, I sometimes that can't always be conveyed or measured in a way that substantiates statements. And so just caution on that for as you continue through. The only other question I had was I was trying to kind of get my arms around, and I'm sure this was explained last time in regards to kind of the pass-fail curriculum, understanding this is, a little bit of subjectiveness that goes into validating if somebody is making the right type of joint or whatever it may look like from that standpoint. If you could maybe just at a high level walk us through kind of the grading approach and kind of that pass-fail, recognizing that, as you progress, that because of the subjectivity associated with it, that could be complicated as the number of students grow.
Yes, and that was also an issue trying to figure out how to put something so subjective on the paper. So even though on paper we do measure by clock hours, in reality what we're also doing is looking at that individual's proficiency, because ultimately our goal is to get that person employed. If we give them a pass, we want to make sure that basically we're vouching for that individual to our partner contractors and partner employers, that they have the skills necessary to get the job done. So that I guess that could be subjective. So it's not just hours based what we do. Some individuals, it takes them longer than the stated hours to reach that level of proficiency. But, which is fine with us. That's, perfectly fine. Some people pick it up, a little bit faster, just have that natural talent for it as well, which is great. But, yes, we have, benchmarks that we want them to meet, not just in terms of time. Like, for example, with our brick lane, we want them to be able to lay 150 brick in an hour, jointed, rejointed, brushed off, to what we call near perfect workmanship. So there's the time aspect of that, obviously, is very easy to measure, but the workmanship part is subjective on that. But that's why, we have Mr. Cummins and his background that's able to make that distinction and vouch for that with the employers and contractors that we partner with.
Totally understand. As you grow, which is the desire, it may become more difficult to differentiate kind of that subjectiveness. And so creating, rubrics of evaluation, it sounds like you have some already identified, and maybe those are clearly spelled out as the students come in to understand what the expectations are. Not a requirement from my perspective to resolve here, just bringing it forward for you, because again, it's an area of sensitivity for students who, you know, sometimes when they're unsuccessful and they feel they are successful, they can bring forward complaints that say, hey, my friend made a similar type of, he went through the course just like me. Our work was very similar. How am I to know his work is better than mine? I failed, he passed. So it just puts the school in a better prepared state, as well as the students have a little more clarity to obviously something that ultimately is relatively subjective. So again, just guidance on that side for consideration as you move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. That's definitely something I will make note of, and I appreciate you bringing that
up. Great. So that was all I had. I'll relinquish to my fellow board members if they have any other questions.
I had a question, Mr. Sin. In the pro forma a year ago, it projected 60 students in year one, 60 and 100 students in year two. Where do you guys, how do you feel about that now, you know, having kind of been through part of a year?
Yeah, so definitely it was more challenging, the environment, I think, than we initially anticipated. And speaking with other individuals like Mr. Lockhart from the APSA, I guess that's something that's being experienced industry-wide, not just necessarily for our school in particular. But, you know, we are growing slowly but surely. And I guess to make a little masonry joke, we try to build things to last. So we want to make sure
that I was going to make a masonry joke and saying you're doing it brick by brick.
That's right. One brick at a time. So we're okay with that. Is, you know, from a financial standpoint, you know, whatever pace we're going at.
Yeah. I mean, the school's doing well, you know, with the numbers that you have. And, you know, it's, you know, I was just inquiring just out of curiosity. I did, 40 years ago, I worked on a masonry crew. I wasn't a tender, but I did work with masons and masons tenders. And I wonder, when a student graduates from the school, do they still have to go through, I don't know if it's a tender, Mason's tender or Mason's apprentice, do they still have to go through a period before they can be, you know, use the title Mason?
So, no, we're looking to place our students into Mason positions. So, like, for example, with one of the contractors that we're partnered with, they go straight into Lane Block or Fall Stone Veneers. We have another company where they go straight into placing the brick inlays into fireplaces at homes. So, no, what we're looking to do basically with our school is take, like, what the way that the unions used to train them, which is, you know, like a 3 or 5 year apprentice program, which in reality is where they're working as a laborer, you know, 35 hours a week, and they're maybe holding a trowel in their hand 5 hours a week, you know, to perfect the skill. We're really trying to compress that into an intensive course where we're teaching them and refining the art of masonry, which is very difficult for them to learn on the job, so they can go into masonry. And we invite yourself and all of the board members, if you ever want to come out and put on some clothes, you don't mind getting dirty, you know, to give your hand a try and see what we do as well, too.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. I don't have any other questions.
I think you'd be probably horrified at the levelness associated with the walls that I would build. maybe my fellow board members would do better. Hearing no other questions, I will go ahead and make the motion to approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation of a $15,000 surety bond to be maintained. Do I have a second?
I'll second that. Scott Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Mr. Sin, are you amenable to the continuation of the $15,000 surety bond?
Absolutely. We are amenable. Yes, sir.
And I believe we are ready for a vote, Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. Vote of six ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Congratulations, Mr. Sin, and please give our best to Mr. Cummins as well, and we will see you maybe in a year.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Actually, afternoon. I apologize. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. So we assume that you're Ms. Doherty, and I'm going to turn it to the Dr. Leck, who is our board chair, or our lead on this application.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. Ms. Doherty, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes. So thank you guys for having me back in. I apologize for the technical difficulties. I started talking and I couldn't hear anything. So I don't know if you guys remember or not, but we are actually based out of Cincinnati, Ohio. We have 14 locations so far in Ohio, Arizona, Kentucky, Georgia, and we will be in Pennsylvania soon as well. But basically, our focus is a lot like the Accelerated Dental Assistant Academy. Our focus is to kind of help solve the hiring crisis for dental assistants all across the United States that we're seeing from the pandemic, which it's worked really, really well with hiring. And actually, as you can see, we didn't have a class up until our current session. We're currently in the fall session. They graduate the beginning of November. It did take a little longer than expected for our Arizona location than our other locations that we've done. But so far, the students are loving it. We do have a class of three right now, and we're hoping that is going to increase just like it did with our other locations. We started out with two, and now we're up to five locations with about 15 minimum per class. So it's grown tremendously in Ohio and Kentucky. So we're hoping we see the same growth in Arizona as well. You know, we're definitely seeing good results with as far as the hiring. We actually, Dr. Kane, who we host the classes out of, he's actually going to be hiring a couple of the students to start working in his office because they are in dire need of assistance. We're just going to keep continuing and hopefully seeing more classes in the spring and summer session as well.
Okay, well, thank you for that. That helps helps some of the questions I have. At the Goodyear location, you have one program, the dental assisting?
Yes.
Only? So, and on your website, it appears you have two different programs, an administrative program, but you're not planning on offering that in Arizona, I assume?
Not as of right now, just because our corporate office is actually located in Ohio, so that's where we have our administrative. If we do into administrative eventually, then we'll have to have a person who is very specific in the administrative aspect, which could be a few things. That's the hope, is to have both in every location, but as of right now, we're just focusing on the clinical aspect there.
Okay, so one thing I might encourage you to do, when I looked at your website, there is no way to tell which programs are available at which location, and so if you went there, it looks like you can do both. You might want to be streamline that to make sure that no one gets the impression that that's available here.
Okay.
Going to the calendar, that was helpful. How many students did you say you have currently?
We have three.
Three. Okay. So in your materials and in the website, it was either website or the catalog, it indicated that you wouldn't start it with less than five, but you would. Correct.
So it depends. We walk this fine line where Dr. Eisen really wants to have five students in order to actually profit and make a better profit than what we would having three students. But because when we start up in a location such as Arizona, or when we had our first location in Kentucky, we feel that we saw better long-term results when we started a class with two or three students, because then we hand out referral cards and start that ball rolling. So typically after a first session, yes, we don't have a class until we have a minimum of five students. But because this is the very first class we're holding in that location, we wanted to at least get the word out and start that ball rolling referrals for the future.
Got it. Okay. In your catalog, you have the fall 2022 Saturday sessions listed, but I think you have a DeLorean because we're going back in time. All the dates are from 2021.
Okay.
Yeah, you might want to update those. And then it didn't become apparent. If you're having future sessions, I don't think I saw anywhere where their dates of what the future was. It, like in your FAQs, I could see that you're trying to do, you know, four seasonal starts, if you will. But I didn't see any information on if someone was interested in the next few. So I didn't know if you might want to look at that and try to add more details in there.
Okay.
And then funny enough, if you look at the sentence that happens right after the dates of the sessions, it says enrollment for a session ends the day before the beginning of the session. I think you might mean next session. So it's,
yeah,
you know, like another back in time moment right there.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so if you have three students, I'm assuming, and the way that your program works is you're doing essentially the didactic is occurring online, and students do that on their own time. What's your LMS that you're using for delivery of the electronic component of your program?
So we use Cisco WebEx. It's similar to like a Zoom.
Okay.
And what I do is that is a pre-recorded link that I send out via email to all the students.
Okay, and that's 3 hours long?
It depends on the lecture. Some are 3 hours or some maybe 30 minutes to an hour. It just depends. But the ones that they're split up into kind of 5 week chunks. So the first five videos are the bulk of the general dentistry, and those tend to be the longest. So by making the videos, or not by making, by watching the videos, the students pausing, taking notes, making sure that they're reading along with their textbook and binder and making their own notes, it should take the student up to 3 hours to complete that.
Okay, then what are they going to do for the didactic ones that are later in the program if they're not that long? How are they satisfying those 3 hours?
Those are still by study time and the quizzes and tests that we send out for that. That should be made up in that time.
Okay. So the way I'm used to this is you have to fulfill all the time that you state your program is. Is there a ramification if a student doesn't fulfill all 60 hours?
If it depends. So the didactic portion is on their own time. So if there's no way for me to technically track whether the student has watched the video or not. Obviously, it would be clear the lab portion. But when the student completes the lab portion in person, that's when they're doing the majority of the training and what they've learned previously in the lectures.
Yeah, my only concern is that if you're not providing enough content that you think would take 3 hours for the end of that program, that they're not actually getting the 60 hours. You know what I mean? If that's what they're paying for, so then you could get into another pickle there of, you know, I enrolled in a program, but I only spent 40 hours. I didn't spend 60 hours. So I would think that you'd want to make sure you meet what you say you're providing.
Okay.
So I understand. So then because you have three students, you would only necessarily need one faculty to go in there every Saturday to do the clinical component. And I'm assuming you would just scale up on that, and that the requirements for that is that they had been a dental assistant. Is there any time frame for how long they would have to have been one, or what is your requirements for faculty?
I don't think I'm understanding what you're asking. Can you repeat that?
So what do your faculty have to have, I'm assuming experience-wise, in order to teach?
Okay. So for faculty, we go by experience. So I know here in Ohio with the Ohio State Board, they have to have a minimum of at least 2 years in the dental field as a dental assistant, where Joanna, she's got over 10 years experience at the one in Georgia, or I'm sorry, at the one in Arizona. So they have to meet a minimum of 2 years as a dental assistant in order to be a head instructor. If they don't, then they have to meet that criteria first before they can even be considered to teach.
Okay. All right. Okay, skipping through. Okay, so let's go into how you're assessing these students. So your catalog says that you have to have a D average, right? So you have to have at least, I believe, what, 300 points in order to complete the program. And then under that, it says that radiology is graded separately and has its own grade. So does that mean, like, what if one is a failing grade and the other one is a D, they fail everything? Or is it a and or situation where you can have one but you don't get the other kind of thing? How does that work?
So it's kind of tricky. For Arizona's a little different. So Arizona's radiology requirement, you have to take the RHS Dale radiology exam on their own time. So say, for example, that they did not pass the program and did not receive their certificate, that student can pay to take the radiology exam for Arizona, but they won't have the certificate of completion to show that they have the background of it. So it is a one or the other. They can, for example, the students I currently have, we give them the study guide for the Dale RHS exam, but if they graduate and they meet our requirements, they meet the minimum 300 points on their tests and quizzes, they attend at least 7 out of the 10 labs. If they do not pass the radiology license, they're going to have to do that on their own time in order to do that. So they can have their certificate of completion, but they may not necessarily pass their radiography license exam, depending on the time they spent studying.
Okay, so I think that's going to be pretty, I think that's, there's a lot of information that you gave there that I think isn't contained within your catalog for Arizona, that I think students who, especially the students that you're accepting, right? You're accepting high school students. You're accepting, you know, that they probably don't understand that. You probably want to beef that up a lot to help okay. them understand that before, you know, someone doesn't qualify or something and now they have to do it on their own.
Okay.
Right. Okay. In your grievance procedure, you have the policy and it actually says when a student has, you know, completed the institution's grievance procedure, then it refers to AZPPSE, but you actually don't have a grievance procedure in your catalog at all that is the institution's. So I don't know, how a student would be aware of that, of what they're supposed to do within your school before going to AZPPSE.
So we don't technically have, we don't have an in-place grievance procedure. The only one that I usually use is the student, if there is a complaint, they have to come to me first in writing and then go to the board. So do you want me to put in a sentence about coming to the program director or instructor first in writing?
Oh, 100%. I'm pretty sure the board staff would appreciate that. I don't want to speak for them, but making sure that you guys are aware of any, you know, grievance procedures before the board staff have to intercede would probably be good.
Okay.
In your rules of conduct, it refers to unprofessional conduct, but there's no context there. And I think we would all agree that that would probably be different depending on our own experience and perception. So I'm thinking you probably want to at least give some examples of what unprofessional conduct would be that you would take an action on a student for.
Okay.
Let's go to your website. One of the things you state in here that is that students will assist real orthodontists and general dentists. So if the clinicals are on Saturday, does that mean that you are attached to a dental office that's always open on a Saturday and that's how they're getting that?
That means that when they graduate, they will be able to assist real orthodontists and dentists, not necessarily in school. So I guess something needs to be put in there is after graduation, the students will be able to assist dentist and orthodontist.
Yes, because everything else in this list, it says train for a new career, experience the latest technology, earn a radiology license, learn from experienced dental assistants, assist real orthodontists and general dentists, and then get comfortable in a real clinical setting. So if that one is after graduation, it's not in the right place at all.
Okay. And we are actually in the process of switching over websites too, which a lot of these errors hopefully will be cleared up. So I'll definitely make sure to include that though on the new website.
Yeah, that's good because there's a lot of outdated information and inconsistent information because, so for example, in your catalog, it'll say you're going to school for 10 Saturdays, 3 hours, 9 to 12, but on your website, it says they're going to school from 9 to 3. And we know that's not the way that, yeah. So that needs to get fixed. Also, all your dates and stuff are back in, back in 20, some of them are really old, 2018. Yeah. I think I saw something 2018, 2022. So yeah, a lot of that probably needs to be updated.
Yeah.
And then in your FAQ, it asks, what's the starting pay for a dental assistant? And you have a statement that says dental assistants can start out making anywhere from $15 to $20 per hour, depending on the office and specialty. You probably want to find something to cite. I'm pretty sure that's based off of your experience. But in my experience, you're going to want something to point to and not just put your experience on a statement like that. So if someone gets hired in an office for $12 and they say, well, you told me I was going to get $15 to $20. First of all, you need backup of where that statement comes from.
Okay.
And then there's one other place where it says in order to graduate, you have to attend all clock hours of the program with no more than 12 hours missed and made up. So wouldn't that just mean you have to attend all clock hours of the program?
So what we go by is all students are allowed to miss up to 3 classes. So that would be 9 hours instead of 12.
So then they only have to go 7 out of 10?
Yes. And if they do, then
they have to get 60 hours.
No.
I don't know how we, do we have a feeling about that, board staff at all?
What was the question, Dr.
Question?
Sure. If the program is stated to be 60 hours and they don't have to complete 60 hours, is that a thing for the board staff?
Yeah, that would have to be consistent with their staff policy. So, and their graduation requirements. So if the graduation requirements is 100%, then it has to be 100%. If it's 80%, and that's where that breaks down, and that's what would have to state.
Yeah, this is Susan. Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. Go ahead, Doug.
I was just going to say that's how I interpreted it because it says you can miss up to 3, and so you could still graduate by their terms. My only thing was on the website, it says under FAQs, it says, do you have to miss? We understand vacation and personal time comes first. If you miss a class, you can make it up. So that's not consistent because you could miss all.
Yeah.
And
well,
make it up. Was it make it up or not? Right.
Yeah. If the makeup policy states they're going to do it on every other Saturday or when it comes back around that class, they can take that class. Caitlin, I know we've discussed it. Is it 100%? Do they have to complete 100% of the program to graduate?
No, it's a minimum of 70%. So like I said, they can miss 3 classes. They have to attend at least 7 out of the 10. If they miss more than those 3 classes, those additional classes have to be made up after class in order to graduate.
Okay, we'll have to update that in your catalog to mirror exactly what's on your website.
Okay.
So let's work on that on Monday.
It's not clear. Yeah, and it wasn't exactly clear on the website either. I kind of put 2 and 2 together, but I think it would be helpful to have one statement that puts all that together at the same time.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah, and even this part, it says with no more than 12 hours missed. So if they're missing the 3 hours of 3 weeks, that's 9 and made up. So I think it's a little too wishy-washy. You know what I mean? It's just, it needs to get tightened up, I think. I agree with Keith.
Yeah, because Caitlin, you can have students can miss classes because they're ill or whatever. But if your policy is 100%, then they have to make it up before they can get their certificate.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, and then my question becomes, and I don't know, I guess would the board staff think that then the hours really weren't 60? It's really, 51 if they can miss 9? Does that matter at all? Not to you?
The program is offered at the top end. So whatever that hourly number is, the number. If they have policies and procedures inside of their catalog and others that would allow a student to spend less than that, as long as it's defined, Just as a note to the school, if the program is 60 hours, 80 hours, 120 hours, whatever, that you have to make sure that you're offering that number of hours for the program. And if you don't, the student could potentially come back and file a claim against you. But it sounds as though you are allowing a student to be less than the percent, less than the total overall, to still complete the program. If that's the case, yep, and that's in your policy, then staff on our end would not have an issue with that as long as it's clearly defined.
Okay. So that means that I would need to go back and state, yes, the program is 60 hours, but there are certain things where it doesn't, a student may not necessarily be taking up to 60 hours depending on their absences and et cetera.
I think that you're
really real complicated. It's a 60-hour program. Your requirement to graduate is 57 hours.
Right.
To me, I would still want to recommend that it's to their benefit to make up any missed classes anyway.
Right. Right.
Especially if they miss like cleaning or something.
Right.
Well, and how are they going to? Can they even pass these tests and quizzes if you even allow them to miss that content? Can they do that?
Yeah, so it depends. A lot of the dental field is repeated. So, for example, the very first class, you'll learn, you know, how to pass in, you'll learn the basic tooth numbers, practice, sectioning, compression. That same stuff is repeated. So there's a core of maybe 5 to 6 basics that we focus on that if it's, this is the first class, they can take the second class and still continue to pick up where they left off. It's not like a big chunk, because those things they have to have down in order to move on to the next one.
Okay, got it. Okay. All right, yep. So if you work with Keith to get that where it needs to be, that'll be great. The last thing I have, and I'm not a finance person, but I had some questions about it, so just because I don't understand how it works, so I would like to ask my fellow board members who are those people. So when I looked at the financials, they were all coming from the dentist's office, the dentist that you referred to. Is that normal? Because then I couldn't tell, like, I don't know how that works. Is that normal? I didn't see a different school. Like, I didn't see, you know, financials for the school unless I don't understand that part.
No, it's very, very difficult. This is Scott Wall. It's very difficult to identify how the entity is performing. Sometimes entities like this bifurcate the operation in divisions, that is patient care and schooling, but it's very, very difficult. It is in one legal entity. That's why you probably see it the way you do.
Hmm. Okay. Well, yeah, and that's my
reason. There are, you know, I agree with you, Scott, and it would be nice if all of us did that. I suspect you could probably make the same comment in our next school. We have schools that, you know, they may be an outgrowth of an existing business. So in this case, you know, dental practices that start dental assisting schools. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, but I think we'll find the same thing with the next school that we're going to be talking about. It would be nice if they did, but you'd be surprised how often we see financial statements that combine the services that they provide with education. It's usually listed under other revenue or services as opposed to tuition.
Yeah, I was looking for a tuition line. That's exactly. And I couldn't find it. So then I didn't know what I was looking at anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's the end of my questions. I would like to turn it over to board members, other board members, to see if they have any.
Ms. Doherty, this is Michael Romano. I'm trying to get my arms around the outdatedness of the website and the course schedules and trying to reconcile that with, I guess, the maybe low student count, if at least from the Arizona standpoint. But I guess I'm struggling right now to, when I see dates back to 2001, like you currently advertise that you're currently enrolling for courses for March of 2022. And so what is the oversight of the website materials and the updating of it and the oversight of reconciliation to the course catalog? Can you maybe walk me through that?
Yeah, so we have had really, really bad experiences with marketing people lately. And this is dating back till 2 years ago. So we had an initial website. That person did not meet our standards, so we switched to a bigger company based out of Tennessee. And that is what the website you're currently looking at. They fell through with them. They've now just been hosting, not any changes that we've requested. This has been about ever since the spring session, it's been going on since then. So we're in the middle of switching over a brand new website, brand new hosting, everything. It should be ready to publish anytime now, but all those things that you are doing should be updated on the new site. And it's actually to the point where I, as well as Dr. I, am able to go in ourselves and make changes, so we don't have to leave it to company changes as we requested. So that's the disconnect you're seeing, because it does. It shows a lot of outdated class dates and other things that have changed. So by us being able to go and do it ourselves, we're able to do that with the new build. So like I said, that should be any day now. I'm just waiting on the final thing to be edited for that.
Is there any reason you wouldn't just take down this site? I mean, it's such wrong information. It may be a detriment to you.
Well, from what we've seen, our Ohio and Kentucky patients have done very, very well, even considering the site. So I have countless emails every site, so I would not want to take that down and have students know what they're seeing us and getting some sort of information. So in our eyes, it's better to leave it up, have some basis of who we are and what we offer, than just take it completely, because our Google Ads and other things that we're currently working on are not up to our standards yet.
I think I'm concerned, because I think what I heard you say was, we currently have a website that's not representative of our factual information, and we're unable to get that factual information updated in a timely fashion. And we're in the process of bringing forward a new website, but currently this information is inaccurate information. So I guess I'm struggling with that.
Yeah, it's almost a concern of administrative capacity. We've seen it before, where you have to be able to have control over your information, and you know, the dates of classes, I think, is one thing, but when you have like mismatches on what the times are for the courses and stuff, I think that stuff can really get you into a pickle.
Right. No, I agree. Like I said, that's something that you're working on, the final production of the website to go up. It's just, I don't want to hurt the current locations that have a really good flow going right now in Ohio and Kentucky, and to rather take that down and not do that than keep it up and people get the gist of who we are.
Yeah.
Because the classes and that sort of information, those are a lot of things that a student calls and says, hey, I noticed that, you know, dates, there's no for, you know, spring of 2023. Can you tell me those dates? I'm more than happy. I can obviously do that over the phone or over the exam. Whereas if you don't have a website up in general, people can't know about it.
Yeah, I think Dr. Leck, I think, said it well. It's beyond just the class schedules. There's seems to be other inaccurate information on the website. Do you have an ETA on when you will bring the new website live?
Yes. So actually, I spoke to the new web designer yesterday, and in 1 to 2 business days, that last ticket I submitted should be up. So it should be up and live the beginning of next week.
I'm sorry, did you say the beginning of next week?
Yes.
Okay. Oh. All right. That's all the questions I had.
Any other board members? Okay. Then Dr. Mittman, if you would, I'd like to make a motion slightly amended based on the staff recommendation, just to approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond is maintained and that board staff receive an update on the website content as soon as it's live.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I will second. Thank you, Dr. Leck.
Okay, and you guys accept the surety bond and the update on the content of the website within the next week?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Yeah.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye. Second on that one?
There was.
Yeah.
Yes, radio. I think. Great.
Paul Mittman seconded.
Okay. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Simply Body Art. Our board lead is Mr. Scott Wallace. Take it away. I think you're still on mute, Scott.
I'll try it without mute this time. Do we have a representative of Simply Body Art on the line?
Yes. Hello, yeah, this is Mary.
Mary Baker?
Yes. Okay. Hannah Teal is out of the studio for the next week, and so she's unable to attend.
Okay. Welcome. Welcome, Ms. Baker. Do you have any opening comments you want to share with the board here?
Well, I guess there's one nice thing about being the last is I've been able to listen to everybody else's conversation and comments. So we maybe can move this forward pretty quickly. We are a really small studio here in Phoenix, and our training is within our studio. So when you do look at our financials, you'll see that there really isn't, we have not broken that out. So I've made some notes here that we'll be changing that and moving an accounting spot for student tuition income line so that that'll be much more easily to be seen by the board and anybody who's overseeing. But anyway, we just are a small company. And honestly, in this last year, we've had one student come through our doors and two students in the program. One is still on her online portion of it. Our training is broken into a couple of different segments. They have a pre-study, then we have an online component, and then they come into the studio for their hands-on and practical application. So one student has come completely through the program. We just signed up another student 2 days ago, so she'll be coming into the studio for her hands-on practice in January. And the other student, we're not sure if she's just going to be content with her online training and let that be. What she completes, she has not paid for the in-studio session because we allow them to break it down financially so that they can pace themselves through the training. So for us, I mean, we're very small, and we're working very hard at being consistent. I think that our biggest challenge is in Arizona, there are no requirements for anybody to take our training. There is no legislature, no licensure. There's nothing that compels anyone to get trained to do this. They can simply go buy their tools and equipment, and they can start tattooing people's faces and bodies. So it's a lot more challenging in that respect. And then the other respect is that because of our professional affiliation with the SPCP, which is a international organization for cosmetic professionals in this industry, we train to their minimum guidelines, and that far exceeds almost anything anybody else is doing in this state. So a lot of people just want something quick and easy, and we're not willing to train that.
we are more passionate about the students that come through our doors being good at what they do and being competent in the skills that they have. So if we're only going to have one or two or three or six students a year, then we'll be okay with that. I'd love to do more, but just kind of the trend, I think, in how people are learning today.
Well, very good. Are you in the Metro Phoenix area?
We are. We're just off of Greenway and I-17, so we're North Phoenix.
Okay. And do you use an accountant outside your organization to do your financial statements? I saw you have a profit and loss statement. Okay. Yeah, it looks like they use QuickBooks, and they should be able to generate a balance sheet for you. That's another – I didn't see that in the materials here. That's a very critical part of managing your business. And like we shared with some other folks today, get those financial statements and sit down or get on the phone with that person. Make sure you understand that, because that's going to be a critical part of your future success, I think. Absolutely. Understanding and managing your business, making changes as you need to. So in the last 12 months, since we I think last visited, you just had the students that you described, and so they're in calendar year 2022. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then the tuition income is whatever it is, but that's going to be in 2022. So the revenues we see in the P&L for 2021 are what do you call them, studio services to clients?
Correct.
Or patients, I guess, in some cases. I guess you call them patients.
We're not medical, so we don't use the term patients at all. We really are just tattoo artists.
Okay. All righty. Okay. And then when the students come into the studio, are they working on humans, or do you have kind of a mannequin kind of process? I don't know how else to struggle with that.
Actually, all of the above. And if you'll, you can go into and you'll see in our website, as well as in our student handouts, it basically breaks down how that happens. And when they're in the studio, they're actually doing practice mediums on their first day, and then they are also doing observation. And then when they have gotten through their hands-on practicals on mannequins, fake skins, those types of things, we also use oranges. I mean, it's interesting what we create for them. But really, they're working one-on-one with me and or Hannah side by side as they're working on live bodies. And so all of the models that come in basically are they understand that they're going to be having a student working on them. And they're practicing. And a lot of times the students are willing to work on each other because they know that they need that in-skin time to learn these techniques.
Okay. And that's what you call it, in skin time. I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. And you do body piercing too? Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, we're very much a non-traditional tattoo art studio. So we do piercing, traditional tattooing. We do cosmetic tattooing. And we do what people call medical tattooing, although it's not necessarily medical because we are not medical professionals. And so we can't really that title, but we do a lot of areola restoration work for breast cancer survivors, cleft lip restoration, burn victims, the scar tissue, those types of things are really a lot more of our main focus here.
Okay. And then you say you're a member of STPC, which not all your competition is, apparently.
There's very few people in the state of Arizona that are actually members of that organization. It's a great organization. It's the only real professional organization as tattoo cosmetic artists that we have. So we value that.
They have well-specified ethical requirements or issues.
Yes, absolutely. for me to be a trainer member, I must have at least 5 years of experience as a full-time practitioner before SPCP will allow me to train. SPCP also has a rigid standard of testing criteria for its trainers to go through, plus ongoing continuing education ourselves. So for us as trainers, we have stringent guidelines that we must adhere to, and we also must adhere to those same stringent guidelines in the people that we're training. Okay. So our program must be 7 days in studio hands-on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All righty. Do my fellow board members have other questions?
You asked my question about having a full set of financial statements. And I think that's come up only a handful of times over the years. And maybe that would be something that we could request if we see that coming through in the applications. We can request, you know, a full set of financials.
I think that's good, Paul. Good idea.
Mr. Wallace, this is Susan Cardulo. My question is just about the liability. I'm curious, do you carry insurance on the students and on the apprentices? It says they're not employed, but you're still exposing them to the clients, right?
Yeah, and absolutely we do. Our insurance specifies, because we are trainer members, that that is all included. That's why our insurance premiums are so high, quite honestly.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Cardula, yeah, they're required to have a minimum $500,000 in liability and $500,000 in error in admissions. So there's two policies that they have to carry, which cover the students.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I hope it's not lost on you that there isn't an artist in the city that's required to have that, though.
Required to have
as
what?
To have any kind of liability insurance.
No, you have to have it to have a license to operate an institution here in Arizona, though.
It's an institution, but not a business. And that's the trouble that we face, or that what we see in this industry, is that we're held to a standard, but anybody who's in the industry, who's working and practicing on people, sir, you could go out on Amazon today, buy your equipment, and start tattooing somebody's face tomorrow.
Right.
In the state of Arizona.
Right. And the reason why the board regulates these schools is because by statute, you are considered a vocational program. That's the only reason why we've reached out as board staff probably for the last 10 years to the Department of Health Services, to a lot of the cosmetic board, and no one will take these schools because they pierce the skin. So by statute, our board is required to regulate those that are training or teaching, whether it's permanent makeup or tattooing. If there's tattooing parlors that are teaching students, not that they're doing it, they would require to be licensed if their programs are over 40 hours and the tuition and fees were over 1,000. I hope that answers your question.
I get it. It's great that we have at least that going, but unfortunately, nobody's required to take the training.
Right. Well, you're right, except for if anybody else wanted to get into the education teaching business, we would require them to, do I understand this correctly? We would require them to have that insurance.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you're on an even playing field as it relates to teaching, maybe not delivering to clients, but, that we're not in that business. So, As you said, the state of Arizona is not in the regulation. Yeah. Or aren't some of those, aren't some cities regulating this industry?
One county in the state.
Is that Merrick? Which county?
No, it's like
Mr. Wall, I think Mr. Lamont, I believe, and Mr. Lamont can chime in on this. Most states don't regulate it. They don't even license these programs.
Okay.
For whatever reason, and maybe it's the reason that, you know, she's brought up, but our statutes is written as such as it's a vocational program. But Mr. Lamont, you might have a different thought on that.
Well, I think that's exactly correct, and I would suggest that anybody in your industry that wants to see additional regulations, contact your legislator and move forward with that. But in terms of school, you fall within our category of needing licensure, and I don't think that
That's not up for debate. I'm happy to have that and have to be part of that. Quite honestly, I would just wish there was more we could do.
Okay, Ms. Baker, this is Scott Wallace. Do you see any problem with asking your accountant to produce a full set of financial statements on a regular basis for you?
No, not at all.
Okay. All righty.
I just need to tell what we need to have in there.
Pardon me?
I just need to tell him what we need to have in there, and he'll produce them for me.
Well, he should understand that. But it's basically a balance sheet and a profit and loss statement, and that should cover you. If it's on the accrual basis, that's even better.
We are on accrual basis, and I know that we did send you that, because I'm looking at, we sent you both the balance sheet, the profit and loss, and a cash flow report. So all of those things were sent.
Okay. All right.
But I know we don't break down.
So I apologize for that. I will, Mr. Okay. Wallace, I will find the, we do have the P&L.
Okay.
But I'll find the others and get that to you.
Okay. That was brought up as a possible inclusion in a motion. And if she says she has it, we have it. If not, we'll just ask you to resend it if you don't mind.
Sure.
Yeah, any other questions by the board? Well, I would like to make a motion that we change the licensing to the regular status, subject to the $15,000 surety bond that you have in place now.
And I will second.
Second by Dr. Mittman.
Ms. Baker, is that $15,000 surety bond acceptable to you?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. All righty.
All right. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
call
you.
To the public. Is there anyone in the meeting who wishes to address the board? If there is, you may have to read a statement. Never mind. Is there anyone who wishes to address the board? This is usually a call out to Fred to say hi, if nothing else.
Mr. Chairman, this is Fred Lockhart. I would like to say hi.
We would love to, and we would love to say hi back. Hey, Fred.
Thank you. Hey, folks, I hope you all have a great holiday season. If, believe it or not, it's only 59 days until Christmas, if you can believe that.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, it's great to see you, Fred, and you already got a shout out from at least one of the schools today. So thank you so much for all the work that you do for this sector and for all of us. If there's nothing else.
Ms. Cardullo has her hand raised.
Oh, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Mittman, point of privilege. I just wanted to point out that we have a new college name. My own personal college that I work for is now known as Smith Chasen College. It's still doing business as WCUI, School of Medical Imaging, and Smith Chasen School of Nursing. But it was a pleasure working with staff, getting that done, and just wanted to say thank you.
Well, good. Well, I guess kind of embarrassing for me to follow on the heels of your announcement, because my school just changed its name also. So the school formerly known as Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine and Health Sciences is now Sonoran University of Health Sciences. So thanks for the prompt, Susan. Okay. So as you can see, we've got a board meeting coming up in December. Well,
and Dr. Mittman, if I can for a moment, just I want to clarify. Right now, it appears as though we will have a board meeting. I think we're going to have one or two brand new applications that we would like to move forward before the end of the year. That may change if we don't receive all of the information between now and the time frame of the December 8th meeting. I just wanted to make sure, is there anyone that cannot make that particular meeting on Thursday, December 8th at 10 from board member? Hearing none, that's good. I believe that'll be relatively short, and then we will have a complaint committee hearing at 1 p.m. on that day. So thank you.
Sure. You know what? I said I don't have any issues. Let me just confirm.
Mr. Lamont, if you could at least put that out to block schedules, that would be
appreciated. I will. I'll get that out today.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
Great.
Okay. Can we get a motion and a second to adjourn?
I'll make the motion to adjourn. I don't know if it's necessary, but.
I'm seconding.
All right, here we go.
All right. We don't need a vote, so thank you all very much for today.
Have a great day, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.